Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakabu.
Hey everyone, welcome to Strike a Chord. We have a beautiful guest today for our 50th episode, the fantastic oboist, singer, and many other special talents hidden underneath there, Maria Lozano. Welcome.
Yay,
welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Maria.
Thank you, guys.
50th episode.
Yes.
It's a milestone for us. 50 episodes.
Wow, 50 episodes. Where did the time go?
I know. It's like started this just yesterday.
Yeah.
We've had such a good journey, such a good time meeting all these beautiful people and developing ourselves as well and just learning.
But learning.
To our guest today. Maria, you're originally from Spain, yeah?
Yeah. I was born there.
Yeah. Hmm. How do you reckon being in Spain has influenced the way you play or your music? Because you're a phenomenal oboe playing and you're very versatile. And I can hear some bits and pieces in there, but to you, do you feel like your home country has been an influence to your music?
I mean, definitely my studies for sure. And I don't play flamenco, but I listen a lot of flamenco. Mm.
But it's not only flamenco that's in Spain.
Right? Oh, of course. Yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah.
So how do you incorporate that instinctively without you knowing, or do you make an effort to sound?
I don't do anything like I don't feel like I put like any effort to sound in a specifically like way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, you know, like, for example, all my studies were like classical music, and then I got really interested in jazz. And that's what I really want to keep like improving. And yeah, I have met like very good jazz musicians as well in Spain that inspire me a lot. And then, yeah, here with Fabian playing some Brazilian music as well gave me like more, like, yeah, stuff to learn and more like,
because the Brazilian vocabulary. Yeah, Brazilian music often touches on those sort of Latin jazz sort of cadences and chord structures. Is that what sort of like influenced you to go down the path of the bossas and the sambas, or is that something that you've always wanted to do?
Not really, because actually, like, of course I discover more like bossa and stuff through jazz. And then Fabian recommended me, or asked me, would you be interested in have this duo of Brazilian music, choro? And I was like, oh, yeah. Actually, there are a few jazz oboes in Europe doing this repertoire. Okay. So I actually have these references.
Is that a help?
Oh, yeah. One of them, he's Jean-Luc Fillon, is a French oboist, jazz oboist. He does jazz, but he has like a few recordings of like Brazilian music choro with another two great musicians. And I actually did like a workshop with him and inspired me so much. I was like, wow.
The choro is a certain type of genre. It's not, it's, you have to do it justice. You have to be careful, I think, with that genre a little bit, so you don't overflow to other certain types of ballads and everything. Like there's a certain sabor, there's a certain taste.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I still like now that I started with this, I'm just, you know, getting like more information, because even as well when I sing, I try to put more effort in trying to pronounce as good as
being
I can
Portuguese.
Portuguese and knowing more of the music that I'm music that I'm playing. No,
it's
because it was new for me, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful sound. You produce a beautiful sound.
Thanks.
There's such a contrast from your playing to your singing. And I think people are pleasantly surprised, you know. When we did the gig at the Ringo Bar, when you guys were supporting us, it was such a refreshing sound, because you're singing with the oboe, but you're also singing, you know. And you had Marcos as well on guitar, which I think is a beautiful player.
So cool, yeah. So
you
cool
can also
have
rap
him.
Really well too.
Oh, Marcos, yeah, please.
We have to get him on the podcast,
yes,
actually.
Yeah. How no, but cool I agree. Was that?
That was so cool.
You will need to request this when he comes here.
Yeah, oh, he's definitely gonna do an on the spot rap. We'll give him a few things for the improv, a few statements. How do you find music here in Melbourne and being a musician here in Melbourne?
Okay, I have to say, probably at the beginning it took me some time to find the people. I was, you know, when I moved here 4 years ago, I was really into finding people to work with. Like, look, let's meet, let's play together, let's see if we connect as well. Yeah, if we are looking for
the gelling period.
Yeah, if we are looking for the same, you know, same purpose, no? Like, just let's record, let's get gigs. And it took me like a little bit of time to find like the, maybe because people were very busy already, or I don't know, but I had like good experiences with the musicians that I have been playing. And now I'm so grateful to actually have like, like this option, not these projects going on and people really involved in playing and, you know, like hard workers as well, like work, you know, committed
to. That's very important, isn't it?
Yeah.
As for any musician to be, as a musician to be committed, but as part of a band or a team to be committed to the other members or other member of the team. It's very important, isn't it?
Yeah. Because especially because I am in this way. Like if I have this idea and it's like, look, let's work on it. Let's do it. Let's find. And you can always, I always say like you kind of always can find the time if you really want to do it, you know?
What's your approach? Do you have a systematic approach when you do things, like when you rehearse and when you create music? Do you have something that you go to? Do you have a routine where, all right, now I'm going to sit down, I'm going to rehearse, I'm going to do this, bang, 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 and I'm going to have to work on this and give yourself time? Or do you just go in and just how you feel on the day and that's how you're going to rehearse?
I think one of the good points that I have had after all these years of studying and conservatory and stuff is like, not only in music, but in life, not sure if that happened to you guys as well. Like, I feel like I can be like very organized in general. And of course the practice is like a routine that I had like acquired for all these years, you know?
Yeah.
So of course, like sometimes I kind of have like enough, like all the time that I would like, especially, you know, after like being working and stuff to practice. But I try to, you know, okay, I have 1 hour. I'm going to dedicate 15 minutes to this, 5 minutes to this. And I actually, since like this past, I think I have done this more in Australia. These past years, I literally write it and tick. Okay. Like 15 minutes on transcribing this, 5 minutes. Or,
so have you got your tasks?
Yeah, yeah. Of this type of pattern. So I took this idea from one book that, like jazz book that I was checking. And it's very cool because sometimes imagine you have like 2 hours, but you stay there and you do things, but
you don't really take advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like profit, good, you know,
succinct practice, I guess. You're really breaking it down into details. So then, I like that. I should get back into that. I was doing that as well.
Yeah,
like,
we were talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, I set alarms though. That helps me.
Yeah. Same,
otherwise,
same.
Yeah. Otherwise you can spend like an hour just repeating this. Yeah.
Even like I wish I have done this like when I was at the conservatory, even though I think I was as well very like organized. But yeah, in the music room I used to, you know, if we had like 1 hour, 1 hour and a half, maybe, oh, I need to repeat, or I need to practice this, like the Mozart concert, this pattern and again and this. Yeah, that's cool. But I think it's important to, you know, to have like small tasks and a small period of time, have breaks as well.
Yes.
And that's one thing that I've taken on lately as well, is it's targeted rehearsals. So you don't need to play the whole piece, especially if you're with a bigger band. You target what are the problem areas, because you don't need to go through the whole rigmarole, because sometimes you only got an hour or two for rehearsal. So if you've got a bigger band, you need to target and you need to ask where have people got the issues, or where the problem areas are, and you target that. I find that more effective. I know I used to rehearse from the start and then all the way from the start, you know, but as you develop and you get more experience and you play with different other people, it's very important that targeted that targeted practice. And we've talked about this many times and it's helped.
It sounds like you're definitely doing it. I love that you're writing it out though. Like, see,
I know.
That's
different. Yeah, I might start doing that. Yeah.
And you're ticking it off as you tick, 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 tick. It's a plan. It's a rehearsal plan, really.
It is helping me a lot. And, you know, through the years, I understood as well that it's more important to... And back then I was like, no, I need to study like 4 hours, 5 hours, whatever. But it's more important to study like the time that you have, you know, but well, you know?
Yes.
It prevents burnout too.
Yeah.
And when you have burnout, you stress. And when you stress, you're not capable.
And listen to yourself as well. Like if you feel, you know, because I didn't do any of these things like 10 years ago when I was studying. You know, if your body, you're feeling sleepy or if you're feeling, of course you need to have a break. Yeah. During the like practice session, you know, then return and then see, you know.
I've got another question for you with all of that. Motivation. If you don't feel like rehearsing today, what's your motivation to get into the room and get your instrument and start playing it? Because once you start playing, I think it's fine. But getting up to, it's like going to the gym. Once you get there, you're all right. But getting to that point sometimes can be a bit hard, and you need a bit more motivation. I'm like, how do you do it?
Oh, well, look, like Maria was saying, sometimes when you're tired, it's important to take a break. So lately I've been a bit less motivated. And so I might go and go for a walk or something for like 10 minutes to clear my mind.
Yep.
Just move the body, because sometimes it's just a lack of energy in your body.
Yeah.
And then I come back and then I'll like set the timer and go, okay, just do 10 minutes now. See how you feel after that, because I don't want to practice tired, because as I've learned, you make more mistakes and what's the point? I'd rather not do that practice or just go for a walk, do something, even just have a 1 hour nap and then come back. I've started napping again. I've gotten over my nap trauma. That's a story for another time. So I have a nap and then I'll do like, maybe 30 minutes and succinct practice. And like you said, I think you learn so much more when you walk away and just have a little take a time, or like so the brain can process what you've just learnt or looked at, and then come back to it later in the evening.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's put a question on that now for both of you. When you've got a scheduled rehearsal with people, and you just don't have the motivation, or you're tired and you need to do it, what is your mindset? What is the thing in your head that you have to switch to saying, this has to be done? So, and does it switch, or do you go through that whole rehearsal like I can't be bothered, this is not happening and stuff? What's your approach, like, because we do have our off days, right?
Of course.
I think I have a few points. For example, first of all, I will be kind to myself, you know. Like, look, I know, like, probably I don't feel like being here, or like I feel, you know, but you need to do it because some reasons, no? So it's like, it's fine that you're feeling like this. Like it will pass, no? Like you will, you know, you're gonna do your thing and stuff. Probably as well, like making as more attractive as possible, or try to
put a positive spin to it.
Yeah, like make it as much attractive. I don't know, if we are playing something that, for example, that we have played like a lot of times, it's like, okay, I'm gonna think it in a way, or I'm gonna imagine something that will make me like enjoying it like a little bit more, or I will focus in something that, oh, I haven't think, or I will sing it more in my head. I don't know, like think about
the benefits of what it can be like if you take another approach,
or put some new things that I haven't done, you know, like make it like more attractive, because that happened, you know, especially when you have played some things that, you know, you need to rehearse some things that you have played like for so long. It's like, okay, we are gonna try to make it like interesting, different. So in that case, I will hear it and I will be as well like, oh, okay.
It's refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
that's good.
Yeah, I don't know what was the other thing, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's probably
And coffee.
And coffee. But it's so important for a musician to stay motivated, isn't it? Because you've got, if you're not playing gigs, if you're not playing live, there's other things that you can do to motivate yourself. Even listening sometimes, listening to music. As a musician, I'm sure you listen to it in a different way, right? But those other sort of things, like you mentioned, going for a walk, clearing the head.
But like you said, listening to music on that, like being inspired, going to shows. Like I'm glad I went to like that jazz show recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And just sometimes you just need to see something different. Otherwise, you just you're doing just that like you said, motivation.
Yeah, I think it gives that adrenaline boost as well. Sometimes in your thoughts, like this is just something you think, man, it sounds so good. How can I adopt some of this into my music? What can I do with this?
Yeah.
The musician's always thinking about that, right?
I think listening about, for example, because it's not the same like being no motivated 1 or 2 days that being actually like, I don't know, 1 month, 2 months, like straight away. But if it happens like eventually, I think it's fine.
Mm.
But if it happens like it's continued, probably we need to see, okay, like talk to ourselves and see what's behind all of this. Like probably what should I change? Maybe I'm having like a very stressful time and I actually not motivated in general.
Yeah.
Or maybe I need to change something in my practice session or in the music that I'm practicing or in the, I don't know. So maybe también. We can always take this as a, you know, as a moment of, okay, if this is happening to me, why? What's the reason?
So what I'm here, there's a self-awareness.
Yeah.
Checking in. Sometimes you just need a break.
You do.
Sometimes it's
that can be there
with not just the music, with everything.
No, yeah,
you got a point there, Anna. And then after the break, things are more refreshing. You think, oh, I've got my second wind.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, yeah, I feel good about this. I've that's happened to me a few times.
Yeah, it has. Yeah. I think I'm on that now. Yeah, like a little bit.
Yeah, where it's becoming monotonous, and then you stop and you think, all right, have a bit of a break, do something else, or go into another project.
Yeah,
come back, revisit, and you think, this is not bad, you know? And I think that's just the way the humans are. They want to be challenged, and I think monotony and people are trying to get out of routines as well, you know, just the same thing over and over again, you know, like Groundhog Day every day. So you want to get out of that and experience something more, not only more joyful, but a bit more impactful on your life, you know?
Something new that you haven't done.
Something that takes you outside of that comfort zone where it's, you know, you're feeling a bit nervous, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's very important as a creative, whether you're a musician, whether you're a painter, whether you do sculptures, you know, you often find some of the best artists in the world, they've done things out of the box and they, you know, it's like, they've challenged them, they push themselves, and they don't really care about what anyone thinks. They've just done it.
Dali.
You know, Dali is one example. He didn't give a shit, but he was created all these weird.
How good he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and that's, I think, it's very important for a musician as an artist to be in that realm constantly. We need to be fed, but we can feed it ourselves, you know? As we said before, listening to music, going to gigs, chatting with musicians, I think that's one of the most important.
Learning from each other, yeah.
Chatting with other musicians is one of the most important things you can do, and catching up with colleagues, and because sometimes, more often than not, the musicians can be very
on their own,
stuff. and sometimes they go into, you know, their own little world, and they start questioning themselves and this, that, but when you talk with other people, you think, oh, okay, they give you a different light, a different angle on things. You think, oh, it's not that bad.
And I think it's so important, not only for writing music, but for playing music, not just having, like, you know,
interactions
and life experiences, you know, in general.
And you're 100% right with that, because whether you're on stage and you're interacting with other musicians and engaging with the crowd, or you're in a recording studio, you're interacting with other musicians that you're recording with, or even just sitting down and having a conversation with them, you're on the same wavelength. So it's very important. And I've mentioned this before, this is why we've done this podcast as well, so we can meet these great artists and have a chat. And as you know, we've talked about this with Amla, you sometimes you get to play with people, but you don't have a lot of time to sit down and chat because you go there, you do the gig, you set up, you do the gig. Okay. You're always, you know, in that professional sort of I'm working sort of mode, and then you stop, you pack up your gear and you go home. There's no, you know,
yeah.
Unless you're going to watch a gig, and then you can,
yeah.
You know, it's a shame sometimes because you sometimes have a great gig and you're playing with some fantastic people and you don't have a chance to sit down and talk with them.
Mm.
Hence the podcast.
So true. And
that's true.
Yeah. Mm. On that note, I'm gonna move the topic to another different question. What was the moment you decided to, like, I'm curious about the oboe. How did you start playing the oboe? It's such a unique instrument.
I was expecting this question.
Yeah. And it's just such a cool instrument, and it's also a bit niche. Like, you don't see it all the time. You normally just see it in a classical setting. So it's really cool that you're playing in Sweet Coco with Fabian and bringing the oboe into a different realm. Yeah. So what's the moment?
I had to say that I really wanted to play flute. But in my hometown in Spain, in Ciudad Real, in the conservatory, when we did like audition, like some when I was 10 years old. And I was like, I want the flute. And they didn't have any positions for flute. But I was super sure that I wanted a woodwind instrument.
Okay.
And I think it's because, I don't know, I used to watch so much The Simpsons. So probably I got inspired with Lisa Simpson. But I wanted the flute for some reason, no saxophone. I wouldn't mind. Like, I didn't mind the saxophone, but no
there
spots
was flute
either.
In The Simpsons, there were the two twins who played the flute.
No.
In The Simpsons.
That's it?
Yeah, but it's only in the beginning of the show. I remember the credits. There were the two twins with purple dress. They both played the flute.
That's true. Wow.
But even the theme song, the start, it sounds like an oboe playing in there.
Oh, I never thought of that.
I think it is. Me neither.
Because it's very orchestral.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I need to.
It just come to me anyway. It's probably not right.
Next theme that I'm going to have. We'll have to
do a choro version of it.
And then I was there. I really wanted a woodwind instrument for sure. And my mom, she play guitar.
Okay.
Classic guitar. And we had the guitar at home. And she was like, I mean, it's whatever instrument you want, go for it. But it's like, we have the guitar at home. You can take it. I mean, like, no. Just, I want some instrument that I can blow air, you know? And woodwind, especially. And yeah, no saxophone, no clarinet, no flute.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, the clarinet usually is the one to go to, but you know.
That year, no positions for it.
Oh, wow.
There was
one
for... No, the
oboe was meant for you. It was meant for you, that's it.
By default, so you didn't even choose it. It was just what was available, really?
Some years there are not positions available. Mm. I remember that it was bassoon, but I thought, that's too big.
It's a big issue.
There was one for oboe, only one.
Wow.
And I was like, I need to get that one.
Yeah.
I wasn't super sure about what was the oboe looking like or the sound, but it was like, it's a woodwind instrument. I'll be fine. Like, I want it. And
that's
then,
so cool.
Yeah. And all the lists, you know, selecting. And I was like, okay, if I don't have this, I was thinking about taking violin, but I wasn't into violin. I wanted
The strings. You wanted the woodwind. It was in your mind, and that's it.
Yeah, and then this guy was telling me, we have this oboe. Give me this.
Fantastic.
And then I discovered the reeds, and I regret it. It's like, why?
Oh my god, you're a carpenter as well. Holy moly!
I know the
more carp. There's a joke that there's a running joke with oboists that. You spend more time doing carpentry than actually playing the instrument.
You get used.
Why is it because the reeds are very small? It's very temperamental, yeah.
Yeah, for example, for the English horn that is kind of like an oboe but a bit bigger and lower pitch. The reeds are bigger, so it's kind of easier for us to play with it.
Okay.
I have no idea of doing them like the English horn reeds, but oboes. Yeah, I have been done in them. At the conservatory since I was super young. And I remember getting like super frustrated about it. Like, you know, it's like, I don't have reeds, I cannot play. Like, it sounds horrible. And then you get used to, because you need to play with whatever you have.
Mm.
And the older you get better as well of making them, you know? Mm. So at the end, you manage. Yeah. And now it's fine because I have like a lot of knowledge and I know how to do that. I do reads as well for students.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes I think like, wow, like how much time I have spent dyeing the reads, doing the shapeless grave or everything.
It's something that people don't realize.
It's crazy. You know? Yeah.
You think, play the oboe, that's it. They don't realize in the background that, you know, you have to be a carpenter.
Yeah. Yeah, I read about it. I was really curious about it. It's amazing. And even just how to play it. Is it true that you really have to store the air and like let out like a tiny amount at a time? Like that sounds like it could put a lot of pressure up here as well, right?
Yeah.
I find that it's such a fascinating instrument.
I remember one of my teachers because I used to, probably I wasn't like, I didn't consider myself as a super like virtuosistic or super, like I think one of my strengths was that I could like resist a lot or play for long periods of time.
Stamina.
And one of my teachers told me in the bachelor, like, you are actually blowing like a lot of air. We're gonna, like at the beginning of the bachelor, we need to make sure that we like focalize this air like more direct.
Streamline it.
Yeah. And when I got it, I was like, wow. Like saving a lot of energy as well.
Yeah. Different world.
Yeah, yeah. He just tips for the embouchure and stuff. And yeah. I remember is Vicente Gemera, one of my super teachers in the bachelor. I have had like very good teachers there.
Is the oboe the same position and fingering as the clarinet?
Different fingerings. It's different, yeah.
And it's a different, can you get oboes for different keys or is it just the one key? Because I know with clarinet, you can get a different keys of clarinet. But I think you can get a B flat clarinet or an A
clarinet. Yeah.
Is the oboe the same or is it just one?
Oboe is just, if I know wrong, I mean, we have like, the English horn, we have the oboe d'amore as well, that is higher pitch. Like we have like...
But they're different types. They're not the same.
Yeah, different types, not the same. Yeah.
With different key. Okay.
If I'm not wrong, I don't think we have any with different key. No, I don't think so.
Because the clarinet is the closest thing that you compare to the oboe, I think. Is there nothing else that you can compare to it?
It's so unique. It's unique. The oboe is very unique.
And even with clarinet, it looks like you can't compare
it. And they assume that you can play and it's like, even the tone,
Even the tone, the oboe has such a unique tone. Like whenever I can tell when I hear an oboe, I'm like, wow, that's the oboe. because it's certain instruments can blend in terms of their tone. But for me, when I hear the oboe, I'm like, oh my God, that's an oboe. You know?
Yeah.
So specific.
Yeah.
The oboe for me... is actually I think it's the adagio in the cuerdas, I think there's a part, you know how we play this stuff in the
it's in that song, isn't
the
it
oboe
plays the oboe, yeah,
it's you just hear it and you think, okay, this is what it is,
yeah.
This is how it's supposed to sound, and it just brings a different light to any other instrument. If you're to play it with a clarinet, it'll be different. If you play it with a string,
different color.
So many different colors.
It's just right for that piece. If you hear the way it sounds in a symphony or in an orchestral sort of environment, it fits.
It stands out.
Another instrument shouldn't be playing that part. No. That's what it is, you know. But then you bring another level to it, another taste, another flavor, because you're playing bossa and you're playing, you know, jazz and everything. It's a different type, because people are familiar with the sound of an oboe being part of the orchestral thing. But when you hear it, and this is like when we did the gig at the Ringo, I thought, man. It fits so well.
It does, yeah.
And you think, you're at that point where you don't even know how to accept it in your head. It plays a bit of games with you, you know?
Because you are not used to, like, our ears are like, what?
But it only took, the first 30 seconds. And then it was fine, you know? And it was great. It was, you play it say beautifully, and your ideas that you come in, your approach, it's a very different approach. And I've always said it's just females in general have a different flavor to the instrument. They add this different texture, different more gentle sort of thing to it, you know, and it's a pleasure to listen to. But you also you sing with it. You use it as a vocal instrument, not just playing. Those the trills that you have in your playing and the melodic structure. I don't know whether it's because you sing as well, but it comes out in the oboe as well.
I'm so glad that you are saying this, like that it sounds like very like melodic and very like, yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It just hits those chords, you know. You feel good if you listen to it. And you think, oh, geez, it's so refreshing out of this instrument, because you don't hear it all the time. But as I say, you just make it so melodic, and it's like you're singing, and then you sing, and you sing really well as well, and that just tops everything off. And your phrasing, especially for the chorus and everything, it's like spot on. The phrasing is there.
Yeah,
it's very important, I think, with phrasing if you're doing a particular sort of genre.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like after, you know, I think discovering jazz for me was like a revelation in the bachelor. Like after so many years of classical music that I have gotten like so much stuff, so good points and knowledge, and I enjoy a lot as well. But yeah, discovering jazz, and then after this, discovering like other possibilities. And more than this, the idea of, yeah, I play oboe that is traditionally more like a classical instrument, but we can now, like, we can do many other things, only this, you know. And not only with oboe, in Spain there are people doing jazz with horn, like French horn, with like all the instrument, like,
and that's such a good thing.
Yeah,
they don't have boundaries.
Yeah,
you know?
Claro, sí, sí.
It's like such an amazing thing, like,
yeah.
As you said, when you learn a different genre, everything just opens up. It's like, oh my god, this exists. How come I didn't know about this earlier?
Exactly. You know? Then when I met these people like doing the same as well, I was mentioning Jean-Luc Fillon, this French musician as well, Marie Pepa Contreras. Both of them, there are so many people that inspire me, but they inspire me a lot. They are doing like such a amazing, like jazz, oboe and Brazilian and other stuff. So then when you meet other people like just doing these things, like you just want to keep going, you know?
How rich is that? You feel like
you feel like
the richest person in the world, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
It fills you up so much. It's like, and if you know how to make your version of it, well, then that's the next level, isn't it? It's all the absorption. You think, oh, this is all inspiring. This is all, how do I make my own journey with this? And, you know, how do I not fuck it up, in other words, but I'm finished. But you know, you have to give it justice as well, because every music is beautiful music. Like there's all these genres, like where I come from, or the Balkan area. The Balkan era was really pretty much concreted into their own traditions. In the last 10 years, there have been some musicians that have just gone, they're bringing in jazz, they're bringing in rock, they're bringing in all these things there, but they're fusing it all together with the traditional style. And when you hear that, you think, I could do this as well. But you have to be careful as well of when you're trying to fuse that together. But you're doing it spot on. You're doing it spot on.
Yeah. I think this, like meeting these people and having like this revelation as well, for me it was like I got these answers, not like, wow, now this is what I want to keep going.
Your journey.
Yes.
This is your journey.
And I have other styles of music, like I really want to explore more. But that's the idea, no? Like just for me, definitely I want to, you know, I have my stage for this. I can always come back. I have this knowledge. Yeah. But I want to keep, you know, like learning some other stuff. Yeah. If I have this, like, this inquietud.
Yeah,
I don't know how it's inquietud in English, actually. Like this desire, no?
Yeah, the drive.
Yeah, yeah.
The drive. How important is improvisation to you?
Oh, for me, it's like as I told you, like, as was like super, super revelation. For example, one of the things that I discovered, and I talk about this, I was talking about this with Ezekiel one day and with other people, but one of the things that I couldn't done back, that I couldn't do back then, was to actually connect my internal ear with my instrument.
Yeah.
In a way, like when I did this jazz workshop with there in France, and they were asking me, oh, sing one sort of melody or a few notes or one interval. And I was just singing it, da da da, for example, whatever, you know. And I didn't know, I mean, I don't have a perfect pitch, but you don't need to have your perfect pitch to connect this with your instrument. And I didn't know what were these notes.
Mm.
And I was like, how is possible? I have been studying like 14 years here in the conservatory. Yeah. And then I cannot do this so simple, you know? And the more I have been transcribing and practicing this and training my ear and stuff, I can see like such a improvement.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's like, I feel like more free. Like I can feel more like the freedom of actually, you know, in improvisation, you have the ideas, no? And then if you can put them in your instrument, like,
yes,
like kind of straight away,
yeah,
it's magic.
It's
like,
so magical.
What?
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes I felt so angry. I mean, you know, I would change like a lot of things in the conservatory system. And I don't feel like in all places are going to be like, and all like, like specialties, like in all different styles of music in the conservatory, there are going to be like issues to improve. But some things that I was learning while studying jazz, like when practicing jazz, is like, I wish I could have done this while I was doing classical, you know? Mm. For example, transcribing. Like, I remember when I did them with this this subject that it was like introduction to jazz for like classical musicians with Ramon Cardo, one amazing jazz musician in Spain, from Spain. He was like, just think about one movement from something that you are playing in your instrument classes, and don't look for the score, just transcribe it. I remember that I transcribed one movement from, I don't know which one, Vivaldi, one of the millions Vivaldi that I transcribed one of the movements, and it was so powerful because I didn't need the music sheet anymore.
Yeah.
I had it everything here.
Mm.
And it gave me like, so I don't know. And it was like,
you did that as well.
Yeah, well, from Ezekiel, he's got me doing a lot of transcribing solos off different instruments. And I love what you're saying. I'm just discovering it now. I didn't realize this too. When you've got all these musical motifs and ideas in your head, it's almost easier to sing them. But then I'm still working on translating that into the instrument because that just helped. That just, like you said, it just opens up another world of level of improv. It's quite.
And also singing, like singing everything you play. That's these two things that I have kind of learned more while studying jazz is like, why nobody talk? I mean, because it's another approach, of course, no? In classical music, it's fair enough. But, you know, when I learned this, I remember preparing my recital for the last year of the bachelor. And I was singing everything that I was before playing it, you know?
Mm.
I mean, of course, I was learning it through like reading, but so powerful. And I try to do all this with all my students as well. Of course, typical students that they don't want to sing because I feel sad.
The teenagers find it a bit harder if they haven't started when they were younger. But it's so important.
But I try to because it's so good.
Yeah.
And everything like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people, I know a particular flamenco guitarist, used to hum everything he played.
Yeah, yeah. Hum, sing,
He used to...
Yeah.
Everything he used to play, he used to hum.
Yeah.
And I think that's just an instinctive thing. But going back to the improv, I'm opposite to you guys. Whereas you guys are coming through the conservatorium and through through the education system.
Yeah.
And then you've come out to improv. I was taught to improv first because I was playing from 3-4 years old. So my father, he was a musician, he goes, improv. And so I've come from an improv background and I've gone into the education system and then I found it hard. I did my classical music training and then I did like jazz and I just found it hard and I found that the way people used to teach me how to improv, I could never get a grasp of it from a jazz sense because I was already improvising. And maybe that's why everything that I was, everything that we would play, like we would do gigs, half the time would be improv. And I'm talking about 14 years old. I'm playing gigs, and it's like I'm playing, and I know everything, but it's like half of it is improv, just shredding or whatever. You know, it's just getting together, and it's like a massive jam, you know. And then when I've gone through the education, I think, oh, okay, there's a structure to improv. How the fuck does that happen? I wasn't aware. And then I had a bit of a discussion with a certain teacher, and he couldn't explain to me properly, you know, how to improv and why to improv. Like, it's good to improv. Everyone can improv. Yeah? Why are we improving? And then, then he gave me some sort of things of how to improv. And you do this scale and you go around this and give this arpeggio and you create from this. I go, yeah, but why? Why are we taking it from the scale? Why are we taking it from an arpeggio? To me, improv is your own personal character. To me. Like, if I was to improv, I'm showing you my character. I'm not thinking about arpeggios. I'm not thinking about scales. I'm not thinking about singing.
But
I'm
you
not
think
about anything.
Like back then, Joel Coltrane was thinking about what mode he was playing.
And he was right in the teaching sense, but I took it from a personal sense, like to show someone who doesn't know how to improv, that'll probably be the best approach. But because I already knew and I found it hard. And it was like we collided a little bit, but I think the why is very important on why you're improving, because then if you know the why, because some people don't know the why, and then they improv, there's no context to it. They just improv, and then they forget about when to stop and when not to overplay, when to give to someone else if you're playing with someone else. I've played with people like that, and they don't know why they're improving. They're just playing. And I think that's a very important thing of knowing why you're improving and who you're improving with. What is the setup? What's the style? What's the, you know, it's very important to know that. But improvisation as a general is the start of your creativity. If you're not improving, I think it's going to be very hard to
you're
create.
You're creating music. I guess that's, you've come from a completely different perspective. You started with creating your own music, and whereas we've both gone through the conservatorium and have had to break the mold, think outside of the box.
The paper?
Yeah.
What should I follow? What should I, you know?
Yeah. And that's there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
You can actually transcribe what you're going to improv, and that that is such a powerful tool to have. Whereas when I was younger, I'd improv and I'd forget what I've just played. You know, it's...
You're in the moment. Yeah.
But it's gone. Back then we didn't have phones, we didn't have recording devices, we didn't have anything. But it's an interesting topic. It's an interesting approach for every musician. But improv is so important. It just gives you freedom.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, I like what you do when you're on stage, when you yell out a chord, someone to give you a chord, and you just,
that's a good idea.
I want to do more of that actually.
It's quite
you
fun.
Should. You should.
Yeah.
As I told you can do like a whole set, a whole concert with just kiss.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking kiss. To do that with my next show. You should. Just do a full improvised set.
You should.
Yeah, just get people to yell out keys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Major keys. Because that'll majors be a challenge only. For me. Majors only. Oh my God.
Majors only.
That could be the show name, Majors Only.
Well, I have two sets. So majors and a minors.
Yeah.
Majors and minors.
No one sets enough.
But it's an interesting subject, the whole improv thing. And it's not only just music, it's about life in general. You know, you improv every day. So
Pretty much. I don't know. I always say that in music, everything is important. I think, you know, theory and have like knowledge of stuff. But yeah, like, you know, there is like these guys, this musician, probably, you know, Joan Chamorro from in Barcelona with this, the Santandreu band. Well, he's a great musician from Spain, from Barcelona. And these guys are just doing so he managed like a band of like a lot of kids different ages, and they learn jazz improvisation as well, but they learn it in a way that, I mean, at the end, you know, it's a language and you need to learn it, but hear it and imitate and repeat and sing.
Yeah.
And that's how they do it. I remember that I was watching one of his interviews and it was so inspiring as well, because he was just saying this, like, look, these guys, we just work on, you know, singing, repeating, then looking it in the instrument and playing with people. Mm. That's all connecting your inner internal ear, no? Inner ear with the instrument. And that's all, you know? And they are playing like amazing. And sometimes they don't know pretty much what they're playing. Then they learn theory and stuff, which is, it's okay. Like, it's good.
Approach.
Yeah. But I think it's so powerful. Mm. And why can't we have a bit of this in the classical I think education,
but
you know?
I think things are changing in the classical world. I think musicians now these days that are doing have gone through the classical journey and like yourselves, you're changing the actual approach now, because you can't always stay in that realm, you know.
I guess it's who you met, life experience, right?
Yeah.
People you meet along the way. And sometimes it happens by accident.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like it's wrong to read
music.
No. And it's not
just
wrong
different journeys.
But it's complementary, you know? Like, you can do like a bit, I don't know. Yeah.
But there's so much music in the world. If you open up your mind, like my mind's been opened up in the last 6 months so much, I don't think it's been opened up that much in my life. But when you open up and you think, my God, it's another dimension.
It's endless, really.
It's endless.
Yeah.
It's another dimension. And you think, why haven't I heard this before? Things are happening and you think, it's sad just to stick to one thing. You know, if you listen to all these things, there's so much beauty, there's so much beautiful music, and it's just sad to stick just to one thing, you know?
Hmm.
And I think music is the connection to a lot of things. And it's like the genres as well. The genre is going to connect you to other people as well. If I was just to stick to rock, I'll be connected just to the people who like rock.
Hmm.
You know, if I was to stick to classical, just be the classical people who stick to jazz, the jazz. But if I open up all those doors and I meet, say, all of these people, I'll get to experience all this beautiful music. I think that's very important. I think it's very important, especially from my end now as a producer. It's very important to listen to all that, to see what's going on, to open up that creative those creative doors, because there'll be probably someone come in and say, look, this is what I sing. I don't know what genre it is. I don't know what I'm singing. So you can guide them, you know, and guide them to the best of where they're going to go and how they're suited. But at the end of the day, music's there to be open, and versatility is very important. It's good for your psychological being. If you know how to play a few genres, it's going to get you more work, the versatility, you know, and you're going to meet some great people you know, at the end of the day.
And for me, it was like a new as well, because, well, in Spain, I was like mainly playing in like orchestras or in the conservatory but like just a bit. But the idea of the like playing in, you know, bars or venues, like, you know, for me, I have been doing it more here when I moved to Australia, because back then.
Here in Australia, everyone does the bars and steal stuff in Australia.
But especially like, you know, of course. And I'm glad as well that there are venues that do classical music, not only like in, you know, like theaters or venues, like, you know, because why not? But for me, it was like another approach, like super, very, very different. And I was like, wow. And, you know, in the orchestra, you are there. It's the conductor that, you know, talks with the audience, and you are there. I mean, in my case, of course, orchestra is the one instrument that tunes the orchestra, no?
The tuning,
and you have the solos and all the stuff. But then when you play in venues like this, it's like, wow, you actually need to, you have an important role. You have a role that you need to interact with the audience.
Yeah, the engaging role.
You know, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's cool. Like, I like it, but it was like, wow, like, what a discovery as well. Like, yeah.
But you've taken it on really well. The engagement with the audience, you do really well. It's like you're natural.
I like it as well. Yeah,
you could. It seems that you like it. You're quite relaxed, and you're telling, you know, introducing the pieces and what the music's about, which is great, because a lot of people wouldn't know this style of music too. let alone hearing it on an oboe as well.
Well, yeah.
And on top of all of that, you've got the awesome accent, which I think people love.
It's a so nice accent.
That's
yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. It's so engaging. Like people will just stop and listen, and that's what you want.
You know?
That's the whole engagement piece, you know.
Hmm.
But it's very important to be engaging. When I was coming up as a musician, I was never engaging. I was very introverted, and I felt like, oh my god, it was like torture, you know. And my dad used to say something, do something, because my dad was a front man, so he was used to the limelight. But I was very much in my own little world, and so it was very, very embarrassed. I would play, you know, and everything, and be fine. By interacting with the audience, I think that came when I turned 40. So later on in life, when you have to, you know. But it's some people have got it, and other people.
It's very interesting.
Will develop to get it.
It's very interesting, and I like it. Yeah, like the few times that I have been doing like this format of performing, you know, like typical weddings or maybe like concerts, but you need to play like one or two songs in Spain. You know, you are just there playing and gone, you know?
Yeah.
And then here is like, yeah, you are still sitting there or standing there. So you are, you know, it's keep going. And at the beginning, the first gigs that I was doing in this format, like here, I was like it's intimidating at the beginning. And then it's like, just till you get used to and you do it more and more and more, of course. Yeah.
You're very good with the engagement with the people.
Oh, yes. You feel relaxed.
Well, like you said, it's just practice. Like, and again, coming from the classical world, I liked to hide behind my music stand.
classic
musician. Theme. Get it?
But I like how you're always smiling on stage. You're always smiling, always like, and sometimes you're playing a serious piece, and then you finish, and you just start smiling, and you start like cracking a joke. Yeah. That's the best, because you know it brings out your character.
Yeah, that's the thing. At the end, you need to be yourself.
Gotta be yourself. But it's funny you say that. Someone gave me some good feedback recently. This is something maybe we can all work on. But part of me once feels like a need to rush the show because you worry that you don't want to leave too many silences. Yeah. So when people clap, they've suggested to me to wait for the clapping to end. I tend to go, all right, the next piece. You know, like you talk over the claps because part of you is like, oh, there's too much pause here.
Yeah.
That's something I've noticed.
That's the anxiety coming
in.
Coming up.
It's interesting,
used to do that. I used to do that. But now I sort of like, because you told me that before, and now I sort of like, to do that, I start tuning my guitar and stuff, just to settle.
Yes. And then you start.
And if no one's clapping, well, then you just wait anyway.
You could just one hand.
You should have a button. You should have a button on the loop for applause.
Oh,
I love that idea.
Yeah.
That's actually great.
Could be canned laughter as well.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's great. Yeah.
I think you had something that you wanted to do for.
Yes. Well, firstly, thank you so much for joining us today. Yeah. It's been great. It's been so great.
It coincides
with the 50th episode.
Yeah, so it does.
And it was also your birthday too.
Oh, it was my birthday not long ago.
Oh my god!
So
oh my god! I don't want to cry.
There we go. Shall we sing it? We're all musicians.
Yeah.
Ready? Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Maria.
So cool.
Happy birthday to you.
Hooray!
Make a wish.
Yeah.
And blow it out.
Take time.
That's the one.
Thank you so much. Adios.
It's funny that you're that's exactly what we were saying.
Oh, of course.
That's so cute. Thank you so much.
Denada.
Thank you so much.
And
I literally make a wish.
Yay.
And just to mention, the cakes are from Cake Eclipse.
Yes, Cake Eclipse, one of our sponsors. Yes. And the other sponsor, musicproservices.com.
That's it.
And before we finish as well, tell us about your upcoming gigs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Upcoming gigs, projects, whatever you have.
So we are going to perform on the 7th of May on the Jazz Lab at the Jazz Lab with Marcos and Marcos Villarta and Fabián Arabales.
Yep. So you're gonna have both of them there.
Yes.
Fantastic. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. We are gonna do like some arrangement. Yeah. We are gonna play the repertoire that we normally play in Sweet Coco, but new, probably like most of them like new tunes.
Okay.
So that's very, very exciting to we'll play with both of them.
Yeah.
Come and watch that.
And yeah, then we have another one confirmed for the 16th of June in the Paris Cat.
Oh, beautiful. Cat. Yeah.
With Paloma and Amy.
Okay.
Yeah, we were nice. Playing Tango, with them, yeah,
recently. Yeah. And yeah, we got these gigs and yeah, we are so excited.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Fantastic.
Yay.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. That was lovely.
For coming on. It was an absolute pleasure. And we wish you all the very best with your future projects and everything like that. And we'll probably get you on again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably get you on. Maybe that was your wish to be on the podcast.
I made too.
But thanks, Maria. Thanks for getting out of your routine and your time coming on. We wish you again all the very best, and also we're gonna have a jam, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Stay tuned for a jam. Thank you.
Till next time.
Buonissimo.
Ciao.
Ciao.
The Strike A Chord podcast, presented to you by ValentinaFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.